superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
People don't understand how hard it is to be a productive running back.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
When your quarterback is not respected in the league.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Why do you think the Chiefs would be interested in Bell, Marshall Faulk?
You can't have enough weapons.
Earlier on the show, Hall of Famer Brett Favre, former NFL linebacker Sam Acho. Still to come, 17-year NBA veteran and NBA champion Richard Jefferson. San Francisco Giants broadcaster John Miller. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. And we're going to have some great conversations this hour. John Miller, the longtime voice of Sunday Night Baseball, we reached out to him earlier in the week when Joe Morgan passed away. And I just adored listening to these guys. And when I got to ESPN in 1996, this is when the relationship with Miller and Morgan was just beginning to take off. And Sunday Night Baseball was as much CTV as during the summer as I thought. I'm a big baseball fan. Sunday Night Football is. And I know the ratings don't compare. But when Morgan and Miller called games, it was special. And then it was special for me because I got to my first cutting my teeth in national radio was being the first ever host for ESPN Radio for Major League Baseball on ESPN Radio, and ESPN got the radio rights. And so I got to, you know, sit in World Series and be the studio host for Morgan and Miller calling the World Series. And I got to sit in the booth and watch them work and get to know them and see their relationship up close. And it was special to me. And when Joe passed away, first person I thought of was John. And he'll be calling in about 20 minutes time, which is I'm very appreciative. It's probably a very long, tough week for John. We already chatted with Brett Favre, Pro Football Hall of Famer, about the upcoming slate of games, including Aaron Rodgers, his successor, and Tom Brady. That's going to be a great week six game. We're keeping our eye on all the news on that front. Sam Acho, a former player in the National Football League. He's still thinking about playing, but he's got a great book out called Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. So that was a great conversation. But joining us on behalf of Shamrock Farms Rockin' Protein, everybody, is somebody who I greatly appreciate in terms of his 19 years in the league, and also seeing him talk about it and be about it and have an interesting broadcasting career in his own right that he's launching, in NBA champion Richard Jefferson. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. So you spent some time in the bubble, yay or nay?
Oh, yes, lots of time in
how
the
long?
Bubble.
How
long? Lots of time in
how
the
long?
Bubble.
How long?
I was there 40 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, though, like, there were people that were there 100-plus days. So, you know, there was no room for, oh, man, I've been here so long. People would look at you and scowl. So I learned to kind of keep my amount of time in general population kind of to myself.
No, I'm not fully aware of what your drinking or eating habits might be. Was the coffee as bad as Jimmy Butler said it was in the bubble?
Look, I'm not a big coffee drinker,
right.
and you know, Jimmy is, you know, guys are connoisseurs. Some people are connoisseurs of
sure.
wine and video games and coffee, and Jimmy is a coffee connoisseur. A lot of people know it, but I did discover Cuban coffee. We had some really,
oh.
really good guys, a part of the crew, that were handing out Cuban coffee, and I had never had it before, and that stuff is intense.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if you had the same crew as maybe we did when we were down in South Florida for the Super Bowl, when they were serving us some Cuban coffee, And if anybody's ever had 5 hour energy, it's really 5 second energy when you have one of those.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It hits you. It hits you really quick. And you're like, I'm ready to take over the world. And
yes.
By the time you finish that sentence, you're like, I'm ready for a nap.
That's yes. It was quite a roller coaster ride. When it happened. Wow. So, but in all seriousness, how difficult do you think it was to play? Obviously, playing basketball in the NBA is a privilege, but
yes.
To do it in those circumstances, I mean, what was that like when you saw firsthand of what you saw, Richard?
Well, you know, it was so eerie because I was there. I got there right as the conference finals started.
Yep.
And I remember the first time I got there and I go to the first game. I wanted to see an experience. And first of all, shout out to the NBA and ESPN and Turner. The setup was beautiful, right? It wasn't big, but it was like you could see it on TV, all the boards and the graphics and all that stuff. They did such a good job considering the situation. But I remember it was like the announcer goes, ladies and gentlemen, the Los Angeles Lakers. And the guys run out almost like it's a joke. They run out and they're like, hey, yeah. And it was like, if you saw, there was no like crazy intros. Guys weren't doing the 12 handshakes that they do. It was very like, let's get to business. And whoever handled that the best, and I'm not even saying the Lakers handled it the best, but of the good teams, I think the Lakers handled it the best, between the Clippers and the Bucks and even the Celtics. Those are the teams that if people had to pick like high level teams that they thought would do better, I think it's because they just didn't handle the environment. And I think that's a compliment to the teams like the Denver Nuggets, like the Miami Heat, the Los Angeles Lakers, the teams that could kind of tweak their mentality to be like, hey, you know, this is what it is. Who can handle this the best? Because ultimately, that's what any championship is about. It doesn't matter if it's college, high school, professionals, any sport. Who can handle the environment that they're in the best is typically the team that comes out on top.
Interestingly enough, Richard Jefferson here on the Rich Eisen Show, the Lakers did not handle it well at all when it was the, if you will, regular season portion of the bubble. It looked like they were sleepwalking through it. And then when the playoffs hit, it was winning time, to use the phrase that LeBron
yeah.
eventually used when it came to the Denver Nuggets. Another team, however, that did not handle it very well, one would say, based on results, you'd say the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, do you think it was the bubble or the fact that maybe their lead player is a Pippen? Richard, what do you think
you're
about
such a
that?
Jerk. You're such a jerk for that, Rich.
No,
I love you. I'm joking. Look, two things. Let me say this. Two things. One, I think if I had one critique about the entire comeback schedule is
yes.
that they took away every motivation for the top team. The fact that those 8 games did not count towards possible home court advantage, did not count towards like regular season awards. Right? So Giannis had nothing to play for. Bron and AD had nothing to play for. So you took motivation away from those players and those teams. So they were just kind of sleepwalking. There was like preseason games. And it didn't make sense to me because the points that you scored counted towards your regular season numbers.
Right.
Right? So when Dan Lillard scored 60, he was the first person to score 60 3 times in a regular season since Wilt Chamberlain and James Harden. So that counted. But none of it counted towards the awards. So I think if it would have counted towards the awards, then Giannis would have been like, yo, I'm out here fighting for an MVP. If the Lakers go 8-0 and the Lakers have this record, maybe Bron gets more MVP votes. So Giannis and Bron and all these players, they really tried to tone it down. And then when it came to postseason, they weren't able to turn it up. Now, to my Pippen comment.
Yes.
People were very jumping on it. And look, you can't really say things in 160 characters, but I stand by it. I think Giannis is one of the great players of this generation. He's so talented. But he is not the player to finish games for you. It's just not. It's like you can't shoot 60% from the free throw line and airball free throws. You can't not shoot a legitimate jumper or a legitimate three and think that you're going to be the individual that's going to finish and dominate games. Like, that's just not the reality of the situation. And LeBron James struggled with that early on in his career, not to the same extent, but just, like, he had to develop his jump shot. He said that against the Spurs after playing against them the first time, that he really needed to improve his jump shot. And you've got to shoot free throws well. It's like, look, Shaq is great, but Shaq also had Kobe. Shaq had D-Wade. Shaq had Pippen. And maybe I shouldn't have said that he is Pippen. He's probably closer to a version of Shaquille O'Neal that can be dominant for 40 6 minutes, but he needs a closer next to him. But you need a closer that can do it at a high, high level, right? Not just a guy that's like, oh, he's good in the clutch. It's like, no, you need a Jimmy Butler, Dame Lillard type player around him to finish it off.
No, and I understand what you said when you said it, Richard. And I'll be honest with you, it's not just because we share the same first name. I agree with you. And that Pippen is still, and the way you, if it's just say he's a Pippen, not a Jordan, in 100 and, less than 280 characters, it does leave out the fact that Pippen is a top 50 NBA player of all time and is stellar in his own right. But when it comes down to it, when it comes down to it, Jordan was the guy who has the ball in his hands when it's time to win it. And if Giannis is not that guy, then it's a problem. So you are the perfect person to ask this question, because we on this show have had a little bit of an argument over the last couple of weeks. Certainly seeing what the Miami Heat have done and how they wound up the season. Would you break up the Heat to go get Giannis? Would you do that?
1,000%.
You would.
I'd break up the Lakers to go get Giannis.
See?
So, but how do you square both of those statements, though?
Well, this is what I'm saying, though. Like, when I say, like Giannis, like, it's not a disrespect. When I was saying these terms and I was saying this stuff, as Rich, you know. What I'm saying is Giannis is still a top two, top three player in the league, and that's 25 or 26 years old. You want that guy on your team. But it's just like every player has a formula. LeBron James needs shooters around him. He needs shooters around him and guys that can knock down shots because he creates offense. Magic Johnson and Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, these guys needed athletes around them. Shaquille O'Neal needed a late-game finisher around him, and he had that in all the players like we talked about earlier, whether it was Kobe or D. Wade. He needed that. That was the formula for him. Giannis has a formula, and the Milwaukee Bucks have not figured out that formula yet. And so, he's a great player, and I think if you had to break up, the Milwaukee Bucks, or if you had to break up the Miami Heat, and you had to send Tyler Hero, you had to send Duncan Robinson, there's probably not a player on that roster that I wouldn't trade for Giannis. That's including Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Because you know where it goes? In my opinion, it goes to the same conversation. Now, I think the young players of the Miami Heat are better, but it goes to the same conversation that the Lakers had about giving away all of their young talent to go get Anthony Davis. I don't give a damn what Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, I don't care what any of those dudes are doing. You give me Anthony Davis, and I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, but Lonzo and Ingram and everybody else who's now a Pelican never made the finals. I mean, Hero is 20. Adebayo is a stud. I mean,
Rich, the one thing that I'll say is this.
Yes.
From being in that bubble and to being there,
yes.
I am not surprised that a lot of young players had great breakout seasons in a confined area. Like, Tyler Hero never had to go to Boston. I'm not saying Tyler Hero couldn't, silence a Boston crowd. Like, he showed us that he's got that kind of mentality, but there is something different about having to travel, having to go to opposing crowds and doing it for the first time in your life. If you've never experienced that and the boos and the hatred and all that stuff, that's just a different experience. So I will still say it. The Miami Heat are proven, but not completely.
All right. So how do you think it does shake out? Because the minute Giannis, if he does say no Supermax, the Bucks have got to ship him somewhere, right? So how do you think?
I think, and what I'm hearing, this is not a quote from me, I think he's going to do similar things to what a lot of great players do, even what you look at what happened with the Clippers, where they'll do 2+1 or 1+1. Maybe he doesn't sign the 5-year deal. Maybe he says hey, I want 1+1, and you could keep re-upping, because what that does is that forces teams into the tax. The Milwaukee Bucks have to go into the tax. In the last 12 years, there's been two teams that have won the championship that weren't in the tax, or three teams, I think. One of the teams was the Warriors, but Steph Curry was on a team-friendly contract because he signed it early. And then the next time, it was the Warriors with Kevin Durant. And the only reason why they weren't over the cap is because the salary cap had ballooned so big because of the Nike deal and the TV deal. But traditionally, the talent on that level was an over-the-cap team. So for the Milwaukee Bucks, if you want to keep Giannis, if you want to win a championship, there's a lot of different formulas. And one of the formulas is that you're going to have to spend money and go in the tax. And so when you do a one-in-one contract or a two-in-one contract, a shorter form, then the team now knows that they have to keep spending money in order to keep you. Because I don't care what that tax bill is, you know what's going to really affect them? If Giannis leaves, because ticket sales, jersey sales, TV, all that stuff is going to be gone from the Bucks if he's not there.
Richard Jefferson, ESPN NBA analyst here on the Rich Eisen Show, and also on behalf of Shamrock Farms Rockin' Protein. Why'd you partner with these people, Richard?
Man, Rich, man, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and that's where Shamrock Farms is, and that's where they have all their signs. And when they called me, and I've always been, you know, even now going to the bubble and I, you know, try and stay in shape and try and work out, and people are like, oh, you look like you could still play. And it's like, no, it's really because I just enjoy working out. I enjoy training. I always have, just even as a kid, I would just play outside all damn day and, you know, trying to stay in shape, especially as I get older. You know, there's, you know, so many protein drinks and protein shakes. And when I found this and already had a relationship with Shamrock Farms, it was kind of a no-brainer being the hometown kid and being able to partner with something that, one, tastes great, two, I already had a connection with growing up. And so, you know, these are one of those things that, like, you know, I used to drive by their big sign going to practice every day. And so to be able to work with a product that, you know, I'm familiar with, I grew up with, that tastes great, that, you know, actually has a function. You know, every time you work out, you know, even in any gym, any league, they tell you, make sure you get your protein, make sure you get your protein. So it's quick, it's easy, it tastes great, man. And it's been really, really one of those cool things. I was like, yo, I get to endorse something after I retire.
That's great.
Kind of cool.
That is
kind of cool.
That's great. Shamrock Farms, Rockin' Protein. Richard, one last one for you before you go. I'm enjoying this conversation. I hope you are too.
Rich, whenever you want me on, man, you know, you're my guy. I'll come in.
I appreciate you saying that because you've been there, you've done that, and you shy away from nothing. So then can you interpret Kyrie Irving's comments on that Et Cetera's podcast where he said that for the first time in his career with Durant, he's got, let me get this quote correctly. I've got it right here. It just went away.
You don't have to get it.
His ability to deliver in this, it's called into question, his ability to deliver in the clutch. It seemed like the first time in his career he said the best option that he said where I can be like that, MF-er can make that shot too.
You know, it's weird. And Kyrie, I don't want to say took a step back. Kyrie said, like, look, I'm not taking shots. I'm not doing any of that stuff. But, Rich, how long have you been covering sports?
This is going to be my 25th year, sir.
Your 25th year.
Yes.
So you've watched MJ, you've watched Kobe, you've watched all these guys. Can you interpret that conversation?
Yeah. He's either forgotten about LeBron James or he wants to make a point at LeBron's expense to talk about how much he loves being a teammate of Durant. Those are the two things that I would interpret.
Because this is the thing. I respect individuals that have covered sports and watched sports and you know more. Like, I was a kid watching the Bulls, but you were, like, covering them. You know as much as I do. Like, there's only a couple of ways that you can interpret it. Just because, like, I played with them and, you know, and I get it. It's like, we all read it and watch it and we're just like, there's only a couple of ways to take this and none of them are good. None of them are good. But I don't think Kyrie, sometimes, like, all of us, we say things and we mention things in a moment and we don't, like, fully look at it in a way. Like, he was trying to give his teammate a compliment, but it was taken as a diss to somebody else. I don't think anybody in the world thinks that, you know, LeBron James can't make that shot. It's been proven too many times over the last two decades. So I just think that, like, I think in an effort to compliment somebody, it was taken, you know, I don't want to say out of context. I'm just going to say it put focus on somebody else, and I don't think that was his intention.
Richard, thanks for the call. Let's chat again real soon. I really appreciate you offering to come on anytime. We're going to take you up on that, that's for sure.
All right, you take care of my guy TJ too, man. You take care of my guy TJ. Well, TJ, I hope you're doing well, man.
TJ,
what's up, brother?
TJ, now again, I don't want to take it out of context, but by him saying that, is he implying I'm not taking care of you?
I think he's just... Yes, 100%.
I'm just saying, 100%. Have you given Richard Jefferson the impression?
I have not. I think he just wants to make sure that everything's copacetic. That's
okay.
Wait, TJ, you still a Bears fan?
No, that was Kutcher. I'm the Cowboys fan.
Oh, no. Oh, the Cowboys fans. You know what? I just remember sitting there and watching you just moan about your fantasy football league. And it was just, you know, but again, I knew it was a long-standing, disgusting team. And it had to either be the Bears or the Cowboys. So, okay, I wasn't too far off. I knew it was somebody. You doing all right after the Dak injury?
I'm telling you, man, I was numb. I was numb till about Wednesday. It was terrible to see.
Sorry, Rich. I'm sorry that this is now the Richard Jefferson show.
No, it's
interviewing TJ Jefferson.
It's quite all right.
It's the Jeffersons. We're moving on up.
It's quite all right. Like LeBron, I'm able to pass it off to the open man and hope he hits the shot, Richard.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. Seriously, anytime you guys want.
You got it. That's Richard Jefferson again on behalf of Shamrock Farms Rockin' Protein. I thought I had an ally. He's calling Giannis a Pippen and not a Jordan. But, yeah, I'll break up the Heat. There's not a single player, including Jimmy Butler, I wouldn't trade to make sure Giannis shows up there.
I'm
still going to die on this hill, though.
Well, as he was saying about the closer, I mean, it was obvious he would have made that trade because you have Butler there.
He does make an interesting point that Tyler Hero, at age 20, not that he can't quiet the Celtics crowd, but he didn't have to either. Yeah. That's a big, you can't forget.
Can't forget.
The old bubble. Let's take a break. We'll come back. John Miller will spin some yarns about his now late friend and partner, longtime radio partner and TV partner, Joe Morgan. John Miller when we come back. Hey, folks. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. You can bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, building ideas with everyone on the same page. And you can make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more all about the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Welcome back to our show on Peacock, our streaming audience. We'll be joined shortly by our radio audience all together. Again, this video that I tweeted out on my Twitter handle I've just watched it during the commercial break, of a Taiwanese baseball player looking like he's going yard. Ball looks like it leaves the yard It looks like the center fielder did not make the catch based on his slumping his shoulders and sort of trudging back towards home plate. The absolute body language of somebody who had made a valiant effort and did not corral it. And then you're watching the announcers call it. It is a home run. The graphics come up. It says solo home run. Rounding the bases. He gets his teammates, give him five. He's going back to the dugout, and he looks out at center field like, hold on a second. Then they cut away to a shot of the center fielder tipping his cap to the bullpen pitchers clapping for him. He made the catch all along. He slow rolled it. I've never seen anything like it.
Nope. That was amazing.
You got to go to @RichEisen to check it out. Hey, everybody. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room. Collaborate live, building ideas on the same page. And you get to see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. We're back here on our radio network, joining us back here on our show here on Peacock. Great chat, Richard Jefferson, right there.
My cousin.
Another guy that had no idea that you knew. It's amazing. You go way back with everybody. So, like a car seat, as you phrase, right?
Go back like 8
So, again, I just want to set up this interview this way. Again, when I was at ESPN, I was 26 years old. I was just starting out doing SportsCenter, and I had dreams of calling baseball games. And part of the reason why I did that is baseball is my first love. I'm an NFL Network guy now, but, you know, baseball is my first love. And grew up loving baseball and watching the Big Red Machine broke my heart. Broke my heart in 1976, sweeping my Yankees. And then suddenly here I am. That was 1976. Here it is now 1996. 20 years later, my dream job comes true. I'm on SportsCenter. And all I wanted to do was call baseball games. And I had an opportunity to do so. And I reached out to a colleague of mine for advice. Couldn't have been nicer. Gave me literally spent 15, 20 minutes on the phone with me, giving me advice on how to call games. And one of the reasons why I reached out to him is he's an all-time great. And then I got to work with him because I was the first voice, the studio voice of ESPN Radio, Major League Baseball on ESPN Radio. And I watched this man work along with Big Red Machiners, who broke my heart in 1976. And watching these two gentlemen together call games for ESPN Radio, but obviously they were best known for their work on Sunday Night Baseball, was an honor, and a feather in my cap that to this day is still one. Never will forget it in my career. So when Joe Morgan passed away this week, he's been on the show, and I think you tweeted out that interview earlier this week, right?
Yeah,
Chris?
I did.
When Joe Morgan passed away at the age of 77, I thought of this man and asked him to come on the show, and he's kind enough to do so. The great John Miller here on The Rich Eisen Show. How are you, John?
I'm well, Rich, and it was such sad news about Joe because, as you know, Joe seemingly had an endless well of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has had more energy than Joe. When we were doing Sunday Night Baseball, he was always flying into town from somewhere else. He'd been at somebody's charity event, helping them raise money for their charity, or somebody's charity golf tournament, or he'd been in Cincinnati doing business with things that he was doing there. I mean, Joe always had all these different irons in the fire, but a lot of them were about raising money for his own charity, for kids, the college scholarship that he had set up, or scholarships for kids who should be going to college, but who just didn't have the grades to get a scholarship, or maybe to afford going to college, things like that. Joe, he was always working, not just for himself, but for other people. And then he'd come and do the games, and so then to find out that he had passed away, because when I had spoken with him, and we talked two or three times during the summer. He was recuperating. He'd had back surgery a year ago, and he kept saying he was getting better and better, and he could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that's as far as he went with it. Then all of a sudden, I wake up and I'm getting messages that he's gone, and it's like I was sort of in a state of disbelief. Joe Morgan, hard to believe, but I always remember the thing about Joe. I mean, he was a fiery competitor as a player. He was going to beat you, and that was it. And he had that cocky bearing of a base stealer. He was going to steal a base, and you couldn't stop him. And he knew that you couldn't stop him. And he admitted at that time that you had to be cocky to be a great base stealer. And he knew exactly how good he was. But at the same time, people didn't see the work and the hours of dedication that he put into it. We started working together, and Bill James, the stats guru, had come out with a book somewhere in that era, around 1990, called The Historical Baseball Abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about all the different decades of baseball and the way the game was played at that time and the way it changed from one decade to the next. But he also came up with formulas to quantify players and how good they were from one era to a different era. And he'd take into account the way the game was played, the kind of ballpark the guy hit in, things like that. So when he gave his opinions about the best players of all time, the best second baseman of all time, they weren't his opinions. They were the results of the formulas that he had devised to try to account for all those variables so that you could make a comparison between, say, Joe Morgan in the modern era and Rogers Hornsby from back in the 20s. And I told Joe, we were starting to work together, I said, you know, in this book, Bill James made the case that you're the best second baseman of all time at your peak, even over Rogers Hornsby. And Joe says, well, that's ridiculous. How could I be better than a guy who hit .424 with 42 home runs?
Right.
Nobody's been better than that at any position. And as time went on, he kind of soft every 3-4 years, I'd bring that up again. and just to see if maybe he was a little more amenable to the possibility that maybe he was the best of all time, which you'd think maybe he'd argue against Hornsby, right, and for himself there, but he couldn't see it. But I think the great thing about Joe was that he knew how hard the game was. And to hit 424, he didn't care what era you played in, that you had to be incredibly good. He says, how many 400 hitters were there that year again? Refresh my memory. And, you know, oh, well, it was just the one. And, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And 42 home runs in addition. So so that's who Joe was. And so in that way, he was humble. And he moved into the television booth, and, you know, he had the name. You know him since you were a kid because he beat up on your Yankees
that's
in 76. He was one of the great players of his era, a two-time MVP, won, what, five consecutive Gold Glove Awards, a perennial All-Star. And every team he played on got better because he was on the team. And so his credentials were secure. His name was secure to get a big network broadcasting job. But he started in Cincinnati doing some local TV, then with the Giants, because he lived in the Bay Area,
right,
and did the local Giants games.
Well, I got
to
tell you,
he was learning his craft, and he wanted to know,
right,
can I be good at this? And he figured, as he was learning how it's done and honing his craft, then he kind of came to feel like, yeah, I could be good at this. And so ESPN came calling, and that wasn't the only offer he had. CBS was coming in to do the Saturday afternoon games the same year. So there were two new network affiliates coming in the same year, and they both wanted him. So he went with ESPN because he thought, well, it's prime time, and we'll go to all the ballparks. And so he thought that was going to be the better, the more fun opportunity. So he took that. And I feel like he was a key. For, you know, he did that for 21 years. We were together for 21 years.
That is amazing.
And nobody knows better than you, Rich, that you know, this is not based on, well, we were Big Red Machine fans, and we were Joe Morgan fans. It's a business. You don't last for 21 years at that level because, you know, they just have a nice feeling about you. And it kind of says it all about how good he was at it, that that he was there all that time.
Well,
and
you're a great team together, John. I got to tell you, you know, my recollection, you didn't obviously know at the time because you were looking at the field, but I would sneak into the booth when I was fortunate enough to be part of the ESPN radio broadcasts and be at the World Series that you were calling with Joe. I would sneak into the booth just to pick up some tips from you, watching you and Joe together. And one thing that I noticed that I picked up on, and to be honest, that I started doing myself, and now it's become second nature, is when I broadcast, I talk to the person that I'm, you know, who's in the room with me, as if that's the person at home listening to me. And I do that a lot, and I do that on NFL Network. I'm doing that literally right now, and I'm not even noticing it, but I do that because I watched you when you would call the game and set things up. You were talking to Joe. You actually moved your body and talked to him and gestured with him towards him, and he would do the same to you. I was like watching two friends talk, but you were broadcasting a game. I saw that with my own two eyes, John.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. And
it was amazing.
You know, the funny thing was, all these years since, I think 2010 was the last year we did the ESPN games together, all the years since then, we would talk periodically on the phone and, you know, occasionally get together, but mainly on the phone. And these phone calls would go on for 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
It's amazing.
And we were still talking to each other.
Well, the Red Sox and Yankees are probably in the
bottom. About this? And, yeah. So,
the Yankees and Red Sox are probably in the bottom of the fourth by that point in time, 2.5 hours into your conversation. You know?
So, you know, I the other thing was, he was a trailblazer because, you know, Bill White, I think, was the first African-American play-by-play broadcaster in baseball.
Yep.
And and he was did a great job at it. Joe was the first African American baseball analyst on network television, and he did that for 21 years in prime time. So in that way, I think because you look at the Ford C. Frick Award that the Hall of Fame gives out, I don't see any black play-by-play or color analysts on that list to ever have won that award. And I feel like Joe should already have won that award. Mm. And now it'd be kind of bittersweet if he wins it. That he's no longer around to enjoy it, but so that's you know, Joe is a guy who, and he was fun, and I learned so much about the game from him. But you know, you could argue with him, and he liked that. He liked to be challenged.
I was intimidated by that. I got caught into some of that too, John. You know, I when I first met him, I was kind of intimidated by him. Because he was opinionated. You know, a guy who reminds me of him that I've worked with is Marshall Faulk, in terms of all-time great, always has tons of irons in the fire, has tons of opinions, will definitely go back at you, and is also just a great person to get to know, and is, you know, frequently the smartest guy in the room. And he would let you know if you said something. I would make a point, you know, in a conversation with him, and he would basically tell me, you know what you're talking about, you know, and it would be kind of difficult for me to take that, but I could see just like, he kind of liked the back and forth, you know, he kind of digged it, John.
He did. And you know, every city we would go into, there'd be somebody who'd want to stop by the booth before the game to say hello, you know, movie actors, politicians, you know, TV stars, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
The one I always remember kind of fondly was Spike Lee, the great director.
Sure. And,
walked into the booth at Fenway Park before a game. And he had come out with a movie a few months before that I thought was a great movie called, I think it was called Inside Man. Did you ever see that with Denzel Washington?
Sure, of
and,
course.
I think Clive Owen, the British guy.
Yes.
And so great movie, and there's a little mystery to it and tension and drama and whatnot. And so Joe introduces me to Spike Lee. I'd never met him, and I tell him how much I enjoyed that movie. And then Joe starts grilling him about, how come you haven't started that Jackie Robinson movie yet? And Spike Lee is very defensive. He's like, well, I can't get the funding for it. The people are not stepping up. And Joe says, well, maybe you're not trying hard enough. Maybe I should go with you the next time and you talk to these people. And I mean, he's
I love
giving him the, you know, the like he's like as if Spike Lee works for Joe, you know. Like, let me tell you, I know all about the movie business, and you're not trying hard enough, you know, whatever. And so he goes through that thing, and Spike Lee's, you know, kind of getting exasperated trying to explain to him that I tried these people, I tried those people, and they just didn't come through with the money. And what can you do? You got to get the money to make a project like that, to do it right. And nobody wants to do it more than me. He says, yeah. And he says, another thing, I liked your movie, Inside Man, or whatever it was called. He says, but you made a mistake when this happened and that happened. And don't think I didn't notice that, you know. What?
That's Joe Morgan, right? That is such a great story, John. Hey, I wanted to have you on to tell all of these, and you're the perfect person to talk about Joe from the perspective of his other career, I guess is a way to put it. And it also means a lot to me that I kind of had a front row seat for a few of those years in the beginning of my career, and I'll never forget it. So I just wanted to have you on to talk about it.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Joe a little bit. And it's still sort of unbelievable to me that he's gone, but certainly a very large legacy. And one thing that I'm happy about, and anybody who knew him, I think, would have to be happy about, we know he didn't get cheated out of life. He lived every moment to the fullest, that's for sure. And you know, I just couldn't believe the energy that he had. I said, don't you ever think that, Joe, you've accomplished so much that maybe every once in a while you should just go on vacation a little more often, and you don't have to take care of, you don't have to answer the commissioner's call, because the commissioner was always calling them, Bud Selig and then now Rob Manfred. They ran things by him. I don't think he was paid. You know, he wasn't one of those like Joe Torre or Frank Robinson later on, or a former baseball guy who worked for the commissioner. He was friends with them, but they wanted to grill him a little bit and bounce things off of him. And so he was an advisor. The same at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And Joe would do things for the other Hall of Famers. He'd take the bullet for something that they were all complaining about. The last one that you may recall was Joe wrote a letter, sort of an open letter, that he thought the guys who were implicated in these steroid scandals and whatnot should not get into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Well, what he didn't say was that all the Hall of Famers were sending him letters and emails and making phone calls to him, saying if that happens, we're not going to the Hall of Fame. That'll be the end of the last time I go to Cooperstown, and so on and so forth. And so Joe just thought, well, instead of these great legends of the game having to go out in public and say that themselves, that Joe decided that he would just put this out there on their behalf. And he got a lot of flack over it, you know, but at the same time, it was like, I think they missed the actual point that he was trying to make, is that the Hall of Famers themselves. And so, I mean, Joe, to me, was just as big a legend as any of those people, but and yet he was the guy out there who was trying to do things to help them out. So a great man, a great American, and as we like to say, hashtag IMHO.
That's incorrect. In your humble opinion, John Miller. Did you got the John Miller drop that we play all the time whenever we are all getting together? Do you got that?
Which one, Rich?
You got that one? Remember he was here?
Oh, yes.
This. Here we go. Here we go. This one.
Squad goals.
There you go.
We say that
all the time.
I never knew that was him.
I forgot about that.
You left a lasting legacy when you came in studio here years ago, John. But
Yeah. Well, Rich, it's always fun to go on with hashtag the goat. I really appreciate you calling.
Thanks the call, John. Right back at you. Really appreciate it. You be well, you and your family. That's John Miller, the great John Miller. May, if you don't mind me just taking a moment for me here on this program.
Do it.
Squad goals.
If you had told me in 1998, okay, right, when I was doing ESPN radio at age 28 and going to the World Series for the first time and being around John and Joe, and that story I told, it's true. Like, you know, I'm talking to you right now telling a story, and then I would talk to you, and sometimes I'll find myself when I do play-by-play, and I'm not screwing up the names, I will gesture to the person to my right or my left, or I'll do that on game day morning or whatever. And I picked that up from John Miller. John Miller, the game would be in front of him, and he would be talking to his right and saying, this pitcher has the good stuff, and you could see it's going. He's gesturing and talking to Joe Morgan, who's then turning back and talking to him. I'm like, that's why this works so well. They're having a conversation. These are two friends talking, and that's why we're sitting at home enjoying the broadcast. I picked up on it and I thought to myself, that is amazing. I need to do that myself. So sometimes I would, you know, Stewart sitting to my right and I'd be doing my highlights and I'd be talking to him. And I picked that up and it's something I use every day, and there might be broadcasters out there. And if you are or burgeoning broadcasters, it's a great tool. It's a great way to sound like yourself. If you had told me in 1998 that I would have John Miller on a show with my name on it to talk about the passing of Joe Morgan, I would have just been, you could have knocked me over with a feather, that these two guys who I was watching and emulating, that Joe would be passing away and John would take the opportunity to call and have, and I'd be able to put this together for you so you could hear who Joe Morgan was. I know he got a lot of grief for his broadcasting. I know it. And he wasn't everybody's cup of tea. But he was a guy like who could tell me, you do a great job on SportsCenter. And I'm like, well, thanks, Joe. Well, what do you think about this? I think it stinks. And I'd be like, oh gosh. Did I just piss off Joe Morgan?
He did it
no.
to Spike Lee.
Like that Spike Lee story where he tells Spike Lee, you're not trying hard enough. That was Joe. And so I'm thrilled to be able to have this platform to pass that along to you. We'll take a break. We'll come back and then use that platform to give Chris Brockman the stage to hopefully make you some cash. And I'll give you three NFL games that nobody's talking about.
Hey, folks, now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. You can bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room, collaborate live, drawing, sharing, building ideas with everyone on the same page. And you can make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more all about the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.
All right, we got a lot to get to. We're going to have to do this at breakneck speed, sir. There's so much to get in the final 10 minutes of this program.
Squeeze it in, man.
Okay. So much to discuss. So the radio audience returns in about 40 seconds time. First things first. Don, do you have that tweet that I saw, the Greg Williams quote? Do you have that? Would you mind putting that up? Greg Williams, 3G's defensive coordinator of the New York Jets, has chimed in. He's chimed in. He's chimed in on the state of the Jets. It was brought up to him that his defense has given up 30-plus points a game, or at least the Jets are, right? His response is phenomenal. He said the number is not a good number, but it's not all defensive things. Asked to clarify what he means by that, Williams says, you'll have to figure that out. Should I give that a like, or should I wait for Le'Veon Bell to give that a like? It's all good in the hood. Fantastic. That's the latest from the Jets camp.
Hey, everybody. Now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and you get to see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. We're rejoining everybody together. Lots to get to. We got a lot to jam in here. First things first. Jay Cutler's Instagram account.
Oh, yeah, all right.
We do this every single Friday.
I love it.
We always wonder what's up with Jay Cutler, right? Before you get to your sneaky good games and the three games nobody's talking about, you ready for that?
Roll it.
Jay Cutler's week in Instagram, everybody.
Is that a thing called egg slonking, I think is the term, is one of the best things you can do. And it's essentially just swallowing all eggs. Obviously not excited. Not doing it on camera because I'm not sure what's going to happen. Post-slunk. Still don't know if that's the term. Chase some water after. Easier than I thought. I did pick one of the smaller eggs from the coop. Best case scenario, I've got some sort of superhuman power. I will take, you know, just better sleep. Okay, we'll just do round two. I think round one went really well. Not sure which superpower I'm gonna get, but I can feel it coming on, and if one's good, two's gotta be better.
Oh, man. Oh, thank you.
I might be able to fly tomorrow.
All right, that's what Jay's up to. I guess he's never seen Rocky.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Rocky.
Disgusting.
Good stuff from Jay. You ready for your sneaky good games, Chris Brockman?
I'm going to go quick.
It's good. Well, I mean, just as long as you make them winners. That's all I'm saying.
Well, we're having a great season so far.
Okay, here we go.
Here's Chris Brockman with sneaky good games. Contests likely to surprise you with their heretofore undisclosed competitive value.
All right, Christopher.
All right, 2-1 last week, 9-5-1 in the season.
Look at you.
So keep following along. Let's go.
Oh, dude, yeah.
First up, give me the Washington football team +2.5 against the G-Men. Giants are 1-7 against the spread. The last 8 home games, Daniel Jones, turnover machine. I like Washington. I also like the Panthers to keep it going at home against the Bears.
I like that pick.
-1.5. They are rolling, and I expect them to go to 4-2 on the season. Lastly, the Niners are in trouble. They're trending in the wrong direction. The Rams are going in the positive direction. Give me the Rams -3, 6-1-1 in the last 8 games against the NFC West.
Wow, so San Francisco is not favored to win at home on Sunday Night Football
they
on
are
the NBC?
Not. I actually think the Rams could win big on Sunday night.
Wow. That's quite a statement. Now, normally I've got an unluckiest lock of the week, but unfortunately for all those teams hoping for an upset, I looked at this. I remember I texted you last night. I'm not familiar with these terms, plus, minus, and whatever. I'm like, give me some teams that would be considered unluckiest lock of the week as an upset. You gave me the teams. I didn't have any feeling.
No feeling.
Get your damn act together.
Sorry, Mr. Jones.
I mean,
I'm sorry, but I do have three games that few people are talking about going into week six that I'm very interested in. I've got two early and they're all early, actually. Bengals Colts, it was in danger earlier today with COVID, but it looks like everybody's fine and ready to go. This would be a nice bounce back game for one Joey Burrow. I just love watching him play and seeing him develop. And the Colts defense is top five in the NFL. It's going to be a tough one for him coming off of the Ravens. But there's a lot of chatter in Indianapolis that this past week, Frank Reich had to say Phillips our quarterback. And I'm wondering if the Colts don't perform very well in this game offensively, if some snowball might begin to roll. I don't know. But that's something of interest to me. Ravens and Eagles are always a fascinating matchup. It's sort of, the John Harbaugh Bowl. That's where he came from. And now he goes back there. And Philadelphia, coming off of that loss last week, and the one thing that I'm interested in for this game, Philly's putting in 5,000 fans in the stadium. So if it doesn't go well, how ugly could that be potentially? Yes. And then we'll see how Lamar has not been lighting it up very much. We'll see how something goes on that front. And I do love the Panthers-Bears game. 4-1 versus 3-2. That's a sneaky good game, not just about whatever you think about plus and minus.
Yeah.
Can Nick Foles follow it up? And can Teddy Bridgewater and this team win four straight without Christian McCaffrey? Because if, as you know, the Saints are on a bye week, and Aaron Rodgers does what people expect him to do, Carolina could have, and I'm going high register, sole possession of first place in the NFC South through 6 weeks.
Ooh, baby.
If they win that game and the Bucs lose. Those are three games few people are discussing going into week number six. Now, Manhattan Beach, El Segundo, where are we here?
South Bay.
Okay, South Bay. Sarah in the South Bay, you're on the Rich Eisen Show. Are you there, Sarah?
Hello, Rich Eisen.
Hello, Sarah Tiana. So it's you, Dick Vitale, and how many other people would be interested in a Braves-Rays World Series?
How dare you, first of all. Because if you don't know how many Braves fans are out there, then obviously you don't own a cellular telephone, because we are everywhere. We are spread entirely around the Southeast. Not only did TBS used to keep us together, but there's no other baseball teams in the South except for Florida. So Florida people like Tampa Bay, and everybody else likes the Braves because they didn't grow up with the team. That's why our farm system is superior, and that's why our bullpen is beating the crap out of the Dodgers right now.
Okay, so your name has been invoked many different ways. You gave me a great line about why the Jets stink, and we're wondering about the mix it up stuff. And also the fact that I can't tell what's more stunning to me, the fact that Chris Brockman is a father now, a father of your child, a very masculine child, or that he's actually defending the Atlanta Braves on national television and radio like he's been rooting for them forever. I don't know what's happened.
Isn't this the most beautiful arc that you've seen? It is like a phoenix rising from the ashes. It is like seeing someone who was so, like when I met him, he was wearing cargo shorts and he had zero will to live. And now he's wearing button-up denim shirts with palm trees on them. Yep. And I wouldn't call him the best dad ever, because that is your title, but he's a gambler, and I would call him the bet dad ever because he is my partner in crime and he's so great.
Yes. Love you.
The bet dad ever. And you're doing the mix it up. It's great for you, but it's annoying for everybody else, Sarah. I got to be honest.
Oh, you guys didn't want the chop. You're like, oh, the chop. It's so racial. We can't have the chop. So then we're like, okay, we'll do something better. That's like fun for our whole team. And then we do it, and you're still not happy. But what you don't like is winners, and that's what we are. And I'll see you in 2 weeks with our rings.
Sarah Tiana, that's a bunch of walk off. Wow. Thanks for the call, Sarah. Thanks for the call.
I love you guys. Thanks.
Back at you, Sarah Tiana. Wow. Wow.
Amazing. calling a shot.
Do you believe it? Do you believe it?
Braves are winning the World Series.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Braves are winning the World Series.
I mean,
wow.
I think so.
I want to thank Brett Favre, Sam Acho, Richard Jefferson, John Miller, and the lovelies and talented and much better half, Sarah Tiana.
Absolutely.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy Sunday Night Football on NBC, and we'll be part of that on Monday.
Peace.
Hey, folks, now there's more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. You can bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room, collaborate live, drawing, sharing, building ideas with everyone on the same page. And you can make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more all about the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.